What's ahead for labor in the next year? With an informal roundtable discussion of that timely question, here is America United, the program where business, labor, and agriculture openly discuss their agreements and differences, united in the belief that they should be openly and freely discussed. This week in Cleveland, the Congress of Industrial Organizations begins its constitutional convention tomorrow. Host of America United today is the CIO, and here in the studio are three top officials of the CIO who will discuss the timely question of what's ahead for labor in 1950. They are James B. Carey, Secretary-Treasurer of the CIO, Alan S. Haywood, Vice President and Director of Organization for the CIO, and O.A. Knight, CIO Vice President and Head of the Oil Workers International Union. Our moderator is Edward Wallace, Director of News and Special Events at radio station WTAM.
Well, tomorrow is the day the CIO opens its national convention here in Cleveland with its keynote revolving around communism. Mr. Carey, would you say that out of this convention will come action that will completely purge communism from the ranks of the CIO?
Well, Mr. Wallace, the impressions one would receive from the newspapers is that the sole purpose of the delegates coming to Cleveland tomorrow is to fight communism. Actually, the delegates are assembling to design constructive programs that will serve the interests of the workers here, the entire nation, and in fact, the entire world, because they deal, of course, on international questions as well as domestic questions. I don't think the communists will like the program we design. That's true. I don't think the communists will stay with the CIO because it can't be a communist and a trade unionist at the same time.
Mr. Haywood.
The communists will try to stay with the CIO as a cover for them. But the membership in the CIO is getting tired of covering for them. They've got to choose to be men to work with other people in the trade union way, in an American way, or choose an alien way that doesn't belong to America.
Mr. Knight, among the oil workers, do you find much communism in your union?
Very little communism in our union. However, we're getting very tired of carrying the burden of these communists on our backs within CIO. And I think that the results of the convention will definitely reflect that a majority of the people in CIO feel exactly that way about them.
Well, to get back to the question about next year, do you think, Mr. Knight, that next year we'll see communism completely purged from CIO?
Well, it's a difficult thing to say that it would be completely purged because of the habit of many of these people to go underground and to hide the fact that they are actually communists.
Well, at least purge them as good as our government has done. We have Americans who are communists.
Yeah, what Mr. Haywood, Mr. Knight is saying here, that it's not the CIO purging the communists, it's just recognizing the fact that the communists can't be trade unionists. It's the actions of the communists that cause this feeling on the part of labor that they have no place in the family of labor.
American labor doesn't want anything to do with totalitarianism.
What are you going to do if they go underground, Mr. Haywood?
Like we've always done, try to smoke them out. Bring them in the open.
Well, the Communist Party has always been underground. It's like an iceberg. A great part of it is submerged. It's hidden. It's a secret conspiracy. It doesn't come out in the open until it's brought out. And that's our job. We bring it out. We deal with it. And I might point out, Mr. Wallace, that it's the labor movements that the communists direct their activity toward. They don't try to infiltrate the Investment Bankers Association or the National Association of Manufacturers. All over the world, the communists want to capture the labor movements in order to control industry and eventually the governments. And it's the labor leaders all over the world and the labor leaders in this country that find it necessary to deal with those communists. And the efforts of the labor movement to put their own house in order deserves a commendation and support of the general public. And I might say the employers have a role to play in this, not to interfere with the unions, not to exploit the opportunities that are presented to employers when we are putting our house in order.
Well, let's get on to another question that's in front of the public eye at this moment. What about pensions and insurance? If the steelworkers gain their objective of employer-paid pensions, will there be any move in the future to increase the total amount? That is, will there be moves by organized labor next year to boost the amount of pension payments, say, over $100 a month? Mr. Haywood.
The labor movement is constantly asking for more. As we improve our methods of production, we've got to have higher wages to consume the things we produce. And as the people need more, the pensioner will need more. Our program is onward and upward. Make America work and make it serve.
Mr. Wallace, I take exception to the way you posed the question. Employer-paid pensions? Why, do you know, it's the farmers that produce the agricultural goods in this country, and it's the workers in the shops, in the mines, and the mills that pay for these pensions and pay for the salaries of the executives and pay for the profits. It's through the joint effort of capital and management and labor that all these programs are paid for. These workers make their contribution. They're paying for their pensions. All they're asking for is the same kind of pensions that the executives of the General Motors and of United States Steel and all these other corporations have been voting to themselves. They want to have a portion of their share of the work they do and the things they produce paid for in the form of social insurance and pensions. On the point of who pays for these pension plans, these workers have the novel notion that they contribute to the payment of these pension programs through their work, and it's part of the cost of doing business.
Well, I think that, tonight, insofar as a direct answer to your question is concerned, that we should understand that what workers are after is security. They want an opportunity to live with a fine standard of living. We believe that there should be a constant improvement in the cost in the living standards of American workers. But there are generally two factors that are going to determine what will be the program of labor next year or the year after. If living costs continue to rise and if profits continue to rise, then certainly there will be demands next year for improvement not only in the field of pensions but in the field of wages as well.
We'll settle on Ben Fowler's suspension for our people.
I beg your pardon?
We will settle on Ben Fowler's suspension for our people. Same amount per man as he gets.
Yes, it's interesting.
Without contributing.
It's interesting, Mr. Haywood. You know, but perhaps Mr. Wallace doesn't, that it was Carnegie that designed that pension program that gives every executive a pension. And it wasn't called socialism or statism then. And there's no contribution made out of the salary of Ben Fairless for the $50,000 a year pension that he'll receive. I don't think we're asking that all the workers receive a $50,000 a year pension. In fact, I know they're not. They're merely asking for the kind of pension that the impartial fact-finding board suggested, appointed by the president, recommends as an equitable solution of the present dispute.
It's time these pensioners of the steel industry, those who represent management, get off their high horse and quit this blarney about this principle of contributing to pensions. Not one of them contributes to a pension, but he receives a big one, a fabulous one.
Well, speaking about pensions, Ohio's senior senator, Robert Taft, has said recently that in his opinion, the entire pension problem is a sort of muddled mess.
But Taft's always muddled anyhow.
Well, he thinks that the entire pension situation ought to be overhauled by Congress at its next session. How about the Social Security pension plan? Do you think it ought to be changed, to put it as some critics have contended, on a more truly actuarial basis? Do you think there ought to be some congressional action next session to overhaul all the pension system?
You know, Mr. Wallace, there was congressional action on Social Security questions. And when the Wagner Law for Social Security was enacted and passed, it was this Senator Taft who opposed the application of the provisions of that law by refusing to agree and carried on a campaign successfully, unfortunately, to oppose that the increased coverage and the increased benefits that the Wagner Law called for. I'm speaking now not about the Wagner Act, as it's generally known, but the Social Security law that he sponsored. Interestingly enough, when the steel workers went on strike, they could only find 14 members in the House of Representatives who would vote against the extended coverage and the increased benefits provided in the original Wagner Social Security law. Now, when we sought to get the pensions through Social Security, we were told by Senator Taft and we were told by the National Association of Manufacturers that that is a question that should not be dealt with by government, that that should be dealt with by free enterprise, to do it in collective bargaining. And when you do it in collective bargaining, they say, why not have it done by government? And I suppose when you do it by government, out comes these same statements by Senator Taft about statism and the government getting too large, that it now responds to the needs of the people, and therefore it's a dictatorship.
That's the history of the old effort. Every time we made an effort to get these things done, men like Taft would resort to subterfuge, referring, put off, delay, blocking every way possible, like his Taft-Hartley Act.
Well, it's my opinion that if the Social Security Act had been permitted to operate as it was originally intended, we might not have this muddle that Mr. Taft complains about at the present time. It did have progressive steps written into the law, which might have provided the sort of security the workers needed and would have put the steel workers in a position where they wouldn't have to be out on strike now for some form of security in their old age.
Certainly it would have eliminated a lot of the muddle. But, of course, it's true that there are industry pension plans and plant pension plans that supplement the Social Security pension plans. I think there's no muddle except in the mind of Senator Taft. I don't think Senator Taft is for Social Security. If he was for Social Security, he'd be for the government-administered Social Security programs, and he would be for the industry and plant Social Security programs to provide the security essential to the needs of workers.
Well, Mr. Knight, with regard to future legislation that might come about in Social Security, do you think that the payments by employers and employees to the Social Security plan should be increased next year?
Well, of course, labor generally has just about given up hope on these Social Security plans through government. And whether they pay in on a plan next year and the industry pays in on it or not, we're still going to push forward for the type of plans that we're now asking for in steel. Because we have no assurance, even if a pension law goes on the books, that Mr. Taft and his associates won't gut it a little bit later on and make it worthless to us.
That's correct. And Mr. Wallace, the Social Security programs by government should be extended in terms of coverage and the benefits improved. It's like the minimum wage laws. That doesn't mean that the minimum wage laws established by government action through the enactment of legislation by Congress should set the rates of pay for all the workers in American industry. But that establishes the base that every citizen of the United States should receive. I particularly include people on farms, domestic workers, and others. They all should receive that minimum security that is contained in the present and improved Social Security government programs, and supplemented by the industry programs in a manner that we engage in collective bargaining to raise the standards of wages higher than the minimum wage law.
Mr.
The
Hayward.
CIO is pledged to fight for improvements in Social Security, both by government action and indeed with employers. Our fight will continue until we bring to the old age of our country, the suffering of our country, the unemployed, and to bring to the children greater opportunity. We've got to fight to make America the best place everywhere to live, to make it work, to give to everybody that security human beings are entitled to, which employers seemingly want to apply to machinery and so forth.
To come to another question now that's in the front of everyone's minds, some economists are saying that if the steel and the coal strikes continue until December 1st, that we might be plunged into an economic downward spiral that can produce another depression in this country. What's your gentleman's opinion of this rather gloomy aspect?
I think the situation is gloomy. As long as a man like Ben Fairless can determine the destiny of our nation by not accepting the report of that impartial fact-finding committee. There's questions raised as to who's responsible for this gloomy situation. How were the votes taken in order to determine whether or not a strike would take place? Well, the vote that counts is that vote of Ben Fairless, because the way he votes for United States Steel Corporation will be the way that Bethlehem Steel votes and all the other corporations in this country. And it's interesting that a few people can control the destiny of a great nation like our own, the finest in the world, the most productive. And these workers want to get back to work. They want to get back to work on terms that they have worked out with the employers. And I think that if a labor union like the steelworkers refused to accept the report of a fact-finding board, the newspaper editorials of this country would condemn these workers and the union as being unpatriotic. And I sometimes wonder, Mr. Wallace, if we're not attempting to operate a double standard here. Certainly, if the workers of America are not working, there's a gloomy future. But I have hopes that the employers in this country, in the steel industry, will recognize that fact and give to the workers just what this fact-finding panel has recommended as the proper settlement. And, of course, they can, if they care to, improve upon it. And through collective bargaining, if they don't like it, they certainly should be required to present a solution to the problem or give, in addition to the fact-finding recommendations, the things that they have been passing out to themselves.
Well, on the other hand, Mr. Haywood?
As a member of the Steelworkers Union, I may say to you that the procedure is quite democratic. The scale committee men, policy committee men, are elected by the membership. They meet then and they vest with certain authority. In this case, they've met and decided that they would accept this report. They're empowered then to strike, if necessary. They've struck. Can the corporation say that they take the stockholders into consideration in their refusal to measure up their obligations now? Have they consulted every stockholder before they said no to the President's fact-finding committee? Have they consulted them and said no to the necessity of American economy being assured and the workers assured of decency and continuity of operation? No, a few executives have decided for the Steel Corporation that they're going to spurn the government's request. They're going to spurn the interest of the country. They're going to throw this country into chaos and into depression if possible. The company, the corporation in this case, are entirely to blame.
And there are no proxy votes in the steelworkers or any other CIO union like now, they have on...
Well, along that line, Mr. Carey, there have been some claims made that if a vote had been taken by all the rank-and-file members of the steelworkers union, there might not have been any strike in the steel industry.
Well, that's a reflection, Mr. Wallace, on representative government. Because every law that we enact by Congress is not a referendum vote by the citizens of this country. But these members of the policy committee have been instructed by their membership. And I only wish that these corporation executives could observe a CIO convention in operation. It's not like a meeting of the Mellons and the Morgans determining what policies that they will arrive at. It's something done in the open light, where God's sunlight can shine upon the delegates right the same as a goldfish bowl, where the public can view it. And I only wish the public, could get a proper interpretation of how an American labor union operates and the democratic forms it takes. The very support that the steelworkers are giving to this strike should be ample indication that they support the policies of their union. And I might say as well that labor leaders are the only people in this country that have to win elections sponsored by the government, administered by the government, in order to present views on labor questions.
I can see that Mr. Knight has something trembling on his lips there.
Well, Jim has made exactly the point that I had in mind. There are 500,000 steelworkers out on strike, and there have been absolutely no desertions from the ranks. That, to me, should indicate that the strike has the wholehearted support of the people involved, and there shouldn't be any question with respect to that point in the minds of anyone, and certainly not in the minds of the employers who know exactly how fully these workers are supporting Mr. Murray and his associates. I think that this is just a piece of propaganda on the part of the employers trying to lead people to believe that the poor, unfortunate steel workers are being misled, when exactly the opposite
is true. Yes, but Jack, you have to...
They're supporting this 100%.
I think, Mr. Knight, you have to forgive them a bit for their ignorance. You know, they're victims of their own propaganda. And they have been putting out the fact that the unions and the members do not support their officers. But the very thing that concerns them is this wholesome support by the members of the unions to the leaders in the steel union in this particular fight.
The attitude of the steel corporations today is the best contributor to communism anywhere. The steelworkers' unions and the American Union, they believe in the American way of life. They want decency. The best way to breed communism is to deny that decency and refuse to advance as necessity warrants them advancing as leaders of industry.
Well, assuming, gentlemen, that the pension and the insurance demands of organized labor are gained in the current disputes and that a settlement is reached on the basis asked by labor, then does this mean that there will not be a fourth round of wage boost demanded by organized labor next year?
I certainly don't think that it means that at all. If conditions warrant, if profits are high and living costs continue to go on up, certainly there are going to be demands for additional monies next year. We are not going to permit a decrease in the standard of living of American people. We want a constant and continuous increase in it. That's what we're supposed to have. And certainly the economic system of this nation is such that it can provide it.
Then you think there will be increased demands for more wages next year, Mr. Knight?
I think this, that as long as the corporations continue to make these huge profits, they're going to be faced with ever-increasing demands for wage increases.
American labor has always welcomed machinery, more and more machinery. American labor will always be after a higher standard of life, to consume what the machine produces. Sammy Gumbus told that years and years ago, and we're still there. Some countries, labor takes the opposite position. We welcome the machine. We want the machine's products to be more distributed amongst the people, and to keep getting higher standards right along.
Yes, this process of collective bargaining is a continuing one. It's the method by which workers can be assured of a fair division of the joint effort of management and labor. And, of course, management has the sole right today to determine the prices of the products that the workers make. Now, if management puts on the market these products and the high prices, the exorbitant prices they have today, then, of course, there's going to be a depression. That's been our history. Depression and war, depression and war. The only way to deal with that is to make sure that the workers have sufficient to buy back the products that they need, to buy back the things that they work. And I might say here that that's important, too, for this important industry, the agricultural industry. The workers in this country are conscious of the fact that the farmers have to be, they're our customers, and we're their customers. And we have to see that their situation is secure.
Well, Mr. Carey, that's sort of getting on the political scene, so let's take a look at the political scene. Some suggestions have been made that the CIO and the American Federation of Labor would get together on a joint plan of political action against those whom organized labor has said are not politically acceptable. Well, would this be purely on a regional or even on a local basis? And can we look forward to the formation next year of a third political party, a labor party?
Well, Mr. Wallace, and I want to make a distinction here between Ed Wallace and Henry Wallace. The American Federation of Labor members and the members of the CIO and the Railroad Brotherhoods and other unions worked pretty effectively together in the last political campaign. And any competent observer would say that in addition to that group, we had the small businessmen and the farmers working together with pretty well-designed plans that became pretty effective. I think we surprised a great number of people as to the results of the election. Now, may I say this, that is going to continue. That relationship between the farmers and the workers, or improved consciousness of the problems that they have, is growing in this country. And I think here in the state of Ohio, there's going to be a real demonstration of the effectiveness of that kind of America United changing some of the unsatisfactory people that profess to represent the citizens of this country.
Are you talking about Senator Taft now, Gary?
I am emphasizing the fact, and I'm talking about Senator Taft. I don't want to confuse Senator Taft with any of his brothers. He's the fellow that has been waging a campaign against the working people of this country to make it appear that they were unpatriotic. And Senator Taft can't point to a single time when the workers of this country, especially in the mass production industries, were unproductive. In war and in peace, the strength of this nation depended upon the ability of the workers. And Senator Taft applies formulas that have no place in a democratic society.
Mr. Hayward.
The CIO has charted a course whereby our people are going to be acquainted with the issues of the day. Our people are going to be activized. We're going to ring doorbells. We're going to bring these issues to them. We're going to have them register as citizens, should register and participate. Of course, Taft and those don't like this operation of ours. But we believe an enlightened democracy is the safest democracy. We believe greater participation upon a part of greater numbers of people means the maintenance of democracy, and better results will come from it. Yes, Mr. Taft and others will know that we keep up our political activity. We're happy to know that our friends in the FFL have followed suit and they're adopting a similar program. They may say some of them on top they won't cooperate. Down below, they will cooperate. That's my answer to you.
And it won't...
Found it everywhere.
And it won't be through the medium of a third party, like the Wallace Party. We're seeking 4 points to get people registered, to get them to understand the issues, to get them to have the records of the candidates aspiring for office in their hands, and to get them to vote. That's the program.
Mr. Knight, do you think this implied coalition between labor as a political action group and the farmers, do you suppose that's going to carry on in support of the Brannon agricultural plan?
Well, of course, this implied coalition is a natural sort of a coalition. The interests of the farmers and the interests of the working people of the United States are very closely related. We're all trying to build a better way of life here. We profess to be leaders of labor. We're not agriculturalists. We're not certain as to what is the best plan for the farmers. If the Brannon plan is the one that they think is best suited to their needs, certainly we'll support them in its attainment. But far be it from us to tell the farmers what sort of a plan they should have.
But the principles contained in the Brannon plan are the principles that would be applied in our own industries as well.
That's correct.
Because that calls for the farmers not to be penalized as they have been because they're too productive. And when workers in American industry are productive, they sometimes find that there's not sufficient market for the products that they produce because there's not sufficient purchasing power. The farmers have been penalized in the past by producing and producing. It's a natural thing for them to do, and they want to do it. And this way, they can take the limits, any limits that may be applied against the production in our agricultural areas, and be assured of an adequate return by government support programs that will give to workers the farm products at reasonable prices and assure that the farmers get decent prices for the work that they contribute to this great effort.
We are happy at the progress that we have made in building a better relationship between the farmer and the workers in industry. It is growing day by day. A great realization of the mutuality of interest, of the desire to work together to maintain fair prices for the farmer, security for him, and security and fair prices for the workers. There's much more will be done in the years to come between farmer and labor.
What about the Fair Deal program? How much of it's going to be incorporated into the political action of the CIO next year? Mr. Knight, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I think all phases of the program that have not yet been secured to the people of America will certainly be incorporated in the legislative program of CIO. We've backed the Fair Deal program. We believe in it. And I think that a large portion of the efforts of CIO will be put forward in an attempt to get the adoption of the Fair Deal program as such.
We are trying to eliminate some Dixiecrats. We're organizing works in the South for that'll be part of our program.
Next year. You're going to renew your organizing drive in the
South. That's going to continue. Organize and activize them.
Well, gentlemen, I see that our time is up now, and I want to thank you very much for this very entertaining discussion of present-day problems and what we can expect for labor in the future next year.
You have heard America United with a roundtable discussion of the question, what's ahead for labor in the next year? Printed copies of today's discussion may be had without cost by writing to CIO, Washington 6, D.C. On our discussion panel today were James B. Carey, Secretary-Treasurer of the CIO, Alan S. Haywood, Vice President and Director of Organization for the CIO, and O.A. Knight, CIO Vice President and Head of the Oil Workers International Union. Our moderator was Edward Wallace, Director of News and Special Events for radio station WTAM. To repeat, printed copies of today's program may be had without cost by writing to CIO, Washington 6, D.C. Today's program came to you from Cleveland, Ohio. Don't miss the American Forum of the Air today on NBC.